Freak. Freak never changes. Since the dawn of mankind, or at least 2017 or so, Controller Freak has found and dissected games new and old. Mostly new because Julia doesn't like old-timey games. But with not one, but two special guests this week, and the game being discussed one of the biggest, most open-worldiest RPGs of the last decade, this fateful episode promises to be a bombshell. So strap on your Pip-Boy, tune your radio to the oldies, and get ready for Fallout 4. Oh, and spoilers ahead. Because Freak never changes.
It is your host, Julia. We have a surprise today, but first I'm just going to introduce the good old bros, Owen and Aaron. Hey, guys.
What's hey.
Up? Hey, that's great news.
Okay, jumping ahead, that's fine. Well, all of that will make sense shortly. And the greatest surprise of today, we have not one, but two extra special guests for today's episodes. They are video gamers. They are brothers. They seem like they're friends. They are friends of Owen's. They are Josh and Eli Keen. Welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Please be seated. Wonderful. Thank you. Yeah.
It's too much, really.
Too much. Like, thank you so much. We got to get moving, though. Thank you. I appreciate it.
It's not enough. I didn't know quite how to prepare for this. It felt like a big day. I've been hearing your names. I feel like I know you, but now you're finally here.
If listeners remember our Among Us episode, these fellows were a part of the group that played with us for that. So
they're friends, a weird time.
Established in the
weird experience for me playing that game. Didn't totally get it.
Right.
But
I have to say it's really good to put faces to the beans.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Likewise, honestly.
Yeah,
likewise.
Absolutely.
I remember
once Owen, because Josh and I both have been listening to the podcast pretty much since its inception.
Correct.
And at some point Owen sent a picture of the two of you and was like, this is what Owen and what Aaron and Julia look like from Controller Freak. We were like,
thank you.
Thank you so much.
You requested it, I remember.
Yeah.
You
wanted to, like, who are these folks?
Who are these voices?
Who are these voices?
It seemed like this was the only way to break you into the Controller Freak family was with a giant, amazing, huge behemoth of a game. We are going to be talking today about Fallout 4. Isn't that right, gentlemen? It's Skyrim, but sad apocalypse, would you say? Everything's gross looking and dirty.
This is exciting just to be doing a Fallout game at all on this show, because I never thought that, Julia, you would play one, because as you said, it's a very dirty, smelly world.
It's not ugly.
This is not a game about rich, fancy people living in fancy houses. This is a bleak, desolate world, which is why I was so surprised to suddenly get a text from you one day being like, I love Fallout 4. I love it. What? Where did this come from? How did this happen? How did this happen, Julia?
You guys, I think the biggest answer to that question, we'll talk about this more in detail, but the soundtrack, the killer soundtrack, once you turn that on, game changer.
Yep.
Game changer.
Can't walk away.
Don't walk away. Don't change that dial.
Diamond City Radio.
Diamond City Radio. So, broad strokes first. Oh, and tell me why, when you would talk about Fallout, you would talk about the Keen brothers. Did you guys play this together? Did you have the same introduction to this game? Are you just all from Eastern Massachusetts? And so this is very close to home for you.
I can remember when this game came out, Aaron, you and I were very excited and we got drunk and went and bought it at midnight and like stood in line. Like, and like bother the cashier. Like,
right. You guys got drunk and went to GameStop.
Yeah, we were smashed inside a GameStop
at midnight.
Was there a line? Did you have to like wait?
Really? A little bit. Yeah.
This game came out in 2015. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. It, and that was the year that I moved to Boston and was living. I grew up outside of Boston, but that was the year that on my own. Well, I lived with Eli at the time.
when we were growing up together.
As when we were growing brothers. Up, but then in 2015, in 2015, I moved in with Eli in Boston and was living as an adult in Boston. And as opposed to growing up.
Yeah.
And anyway, it was like a big deal in Boston that this game was coming out. There were billboards, there like people,
that's
it was
true.
On the bus. Like the fact that this was like a big AAA game set in Boston, like I feel like for a few months around the time this game came out, everybody knew about it. People would wear their Vault 111 like sweatshirts that looked like the Vault jumpsuit. I was teaching at a high school also at the time, so maybe that's why. Yeah, I was working in Lexington, you know, and like, and it was just incredible to just be wandering around being like, this is literally, this is Harvard Square. Like, this is MIT. Like, it's a unique experience. And it was a really big deal. And Eli and I shared a copy of this game on our PS4 in our apartment.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
2015, 2016. And would fight over who got to play. Like, we had our parallel games going at the same time. But it was the first, also, like, the first video game sort of non, like, Nintendo Mario Kart kind of, like, adult video game. Like, we went and bought the PS4 with our own money and bought Fallout with our own money. It was, like, our first sort of adult video gaming experience. It was very exciting. And I think that's why I have such a soft spot for it, because playing it again, it's like, 5 years later, I'm like,
I don't know.
Like, as somebody who plays a lot more video games now, like, I don't think it would have sunk its death claws into me exactly the same way.
Yeah. I think for me, like, the biggest thing for me was that it was, I think, the first like AAA game I ever played. Cause we didn't grow up like with that stuff. Like, I think we had a GameCube when we were like, maybe I was in middle school. I don't really remember, but I was like a computer gamer since I was like a little kid. I like cut my teeth on like Civilization and The Sims and stuff like that. And like, I was just like kind of scared of like shooter games or like games that were like, just like felt like too much or too complicated. Or like, you know, Civilization is incredibly complicated, but like in a way that I could like, just like, take my turn and like sit there and like not worry about like if like a fucking monster was gonna pop out and like kill me without my ability to like deal with it. So like Fallout, I was like, all right, I'm like gonna try like a game. And then plus the Bostonian thing was like super cool. It was like, I can't believe they like picked Boston to like make this giant game. Like, that seems so fucking weird. Like, why isn't it in New York? Why isn't it like anywhere else? Like, Boston kind of sucks. So why did they choose Boston for the setting of this game? But then like, yeah, and I'm sure we'll talk about this more, but it is incredibly specifically done. Like, you can absolutely go and find real buildings, like more in the city than in the suburbs. But like the suburbs are like kind of a mess, but the city, it's like you can absolutely go and find like really where actual things are. And that aspect of it was super cool for me.
Pretty cool feeling when you show up to the town that you went to high school in and it's just overrun by super mutants.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yes. Now you know how I felt. I know how I felt back in the day.
Yeah. Hey.
Like, I'm from Western Massachusetts, right? So this is like a whole other world. I did go to college out in Weston. So Eastern Massachusetts, it was nice to see. It's kind of exactly how I remember it actually in the game. Just like sort of, that's a joke about how I was really depressed in college, but whatever. Didn't like it.
You went to college in Weston? Where did you go to college?
This little college called Regis.
Sure. I know exactly where it is. Yep. Oh yeah.
Amazing.
It's like this. The school I work at is in Weston. It's not far. God. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh, and so where Owen, you know,
Owen matriculated.
Yeah. Again, taken over by super mutants in this game.
Exactly. Lots of super mutants.
You know,
Welcome to Regis College.
Yeah. Yeah.
Regis College, our basement has a really cool safe in it.
Yeah. There's a fusion core down here.
Right.
A lot of this game was me explaining to Aaron, though, that Eastern and Western Massachusetts are like different organisms. Yeah. And I don't know if you got that.
You got that? Eventually, okay. I got that. Yeah, because okay. I'm the only one on this
not a
call
Massachusetts,
that isn't of the mass blood. And so I played this game. Can I just say first, it's really edifying for me to know that in Eastern Massachusetts, when this is going to come out, that there were just like dudes running up the guys being from in like Southie being like, did you hear?
Fallout 4. It's Fallout 4, dog.
What faction did you side with, guy? I'm a railroad guy.
Yeah. I'm a railroad kid.
I'm a steel. Yeah.
Man, you see those fucking Maya lurks?
Just, yeah. It's like chaos. Just the power.
It was a phenomenon. It was a major phenomenon for a little while.
So glad.
And did you guys see an increase in tourism, Fallout 4 related tourism?
I didn't see it. I'm sure there was. Yeah. I'm sure there was somebody doing like a Fallout tour at the Common or something. But like,
yeah, and be like, look, where's Good Neighbor? I want to find Good Neighbor.
Where's the Corvega plant? Come on.
Right.
Where's Walden Pond, which is a 10-minute walk from downtown?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So you guys all played this when it came out, more or less in 2015, and your first playthrough experience was generally positive. I know it got good reviews. It was like pretty critically acclaimed. Did you all enjoy it your first time?
I did. I really enjoyed it. I think in retrospect, when you think about it now, when you compare it to, say, the previous Fallout titles, you start to get, at least in my case, I start to get like, oh yeah, that game, this Fallout 4, it's got a lot of problems. But but at the time when I was first playing it through, I remember having a really fun time because it's just so much Fallout. Like, it's just, despite any complaints I might have about the quests or like it's too much sort of fetch questy type situations, it's still just like, yeah, you got that soundtrack, you got the radio station, you got just the whole style of it and the world, and like, come on, they turned Fenway Park into like your
a refugee
main, your like main town. Like, it's just, it was fucking awesome. Yeah, it had a great time, and there actually was, I thought, some cool points in the story.
Yeah, I think the story's okay. I don't know. I mean, it's not terrible.
I have a story about the story. If now is an appropriate time. But this game has, when I was playing it, my friend was watching me play it for the first time, and he was watching like the opening, you know, 30 minutes of this game, the cutscene, the vault, the frozen, the stolen baby, the waking up, and you know, then he went home, and then he told his now wife, then, you know, partner, girlfriend, like, about the game that I was playing. She was like, what were you doing over at Josh's house? And you told her, like, oh, here's the game, and you get put in this vault, and you wake up, and your kid got stolen, and you're trying to go find him.
Who is this?
It's Cooper. Cooper and Sarah.
Oh.
And
what a watch.
That was my guess.
Yeah. Well, and so his wife said, like, that is the most compelling, interesting, like, she was so hooked by it. And I was like, that... like, really? Like, this is not a video game person, really. Like, why is, what is so exciting about that story to you? And what she said was, well, as a non-video game player, she's like, I compare it to the plot of every other video game I've ever seen, which the plot of every other video game I know of is there's a war.
Yeah.
Period. End of story.
Which never changes.
Right. It's like,
which
this is not
true
that
about Fallout. It's just that this is after that war happened.
Right.
But ever since, you know, any... I describe video, there's a whole genre of video game now, which is summed up as there's a war. There's like a war. that's the whole plot. And compared to, you know, Call of Duty or whatever, like, this game has a very rich storyline and plot line. But, you know, after playing this game, it was the first Fallout-esque game I ever, or first Fallout game I played, and then since have played a lot of Fallout New Vegas and the Outer Worlds, which was developed by
Super
the same
Fallout-esque
people that made New Vegas. And once I played those, I was like, oh, that's how good Fallout 4 could have been. Like that in terms of plots and stories and side quests and stuff, like so much better in comparison. But still a major, you know, step above There's a War in terms of storyline.
Yeah.
I really loved it and felt myself like wanting to be doing it whenever I wasn't doing it, you know, like whenever I was at work, I was like, what am I going to do in Fallout when I get home? And then Josh would be playing. I'd be like, fuck, I need to, you know, finagle my way into the PS4.
The fact that you guys survived that is a testament.
I think we worked out a system. I don't really,
but it's hard. Like it's a game that rewards you playing it for 100 hours. Mm-hmm. And it's a game that rewards you playing it for like 10 hours in a row also.
Yes.
It is totally not an amazing game to dip into for half an hour.
No. And there are things that like now when I'm playing it like again, where I'm like, I don't really know why I wanted to do this for this long. Like, especially like building a settlement on PS4 was such a nightmare. Like trying to get all of the stuff to like snap together was such a mess. And I just, this time I was like, I don't care about that at all. I'm just not going to do it. I don't know. It was interesting. Like the sort of plotting and story of it, I thought was cool. The quests were like enough for me again, as my like first AAA game. And then I think like probably the next year I played Witcher 3 and I was like, oh, okay. That's like a good game. Like that's a game where like every time you're like told to do something, it's like, what's going to happen? It's going to be cool. As opposed to Fallout 4, where it's like you know immediately what you're going to have to do when you're being told to like go somewhere.
You have to show up.
Which is fun.
Yeah. You show up somewhere, you shoot some ghouls or some raiders, maybe super mutants.
Yeah. You get something.
You grab something,
yeah.
Take it back to the Minuteman, and they're like, thank you so much.
Yeah. Now do it again forever.
Right. Yeah. Right now.
Yeah. Aaron, how did you feel like when you were playing the game, this one?
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. I was absolutely 100% right. When I was wasted that launch night, the idea that I had in my head was like exactly what it was. It was perfect.
You knew what you signed up for.
I knew what I signed up for, and in my like inebriated like joy, like that was what I got. Was like, it's not my favorite of the series or of this type of game, but it was great. And like, and I agree with your friends. What the woman who would be your friend's wife.
A couple layers deep
is,
on that.
Is my friend's then future wife.
Shifts there.
Future wife.
Yeah. My future wife.
But which is appropriate for a game that is about time and the perception of time in part. But I found it compelling. And I was actually impressed with, but we mentioned Skyrim a little bit earlier. And one of the things that I think you can say about Skyrim is that the main quest is a ride. It's a Disney ride. You go on it and the dragons come and the dragons die. And that is the story. And I hope you had a good time. You can do in Skyrim because you kill the dragons. And like, that's what you do. Whereas in this game, there is like there is a really satisfying amount of like branchability in that late game that I agree isn't quite up to like something like New Vegas, where it's literally like the world is your oyster. But I was impressed with, and I was impressed with the amount of like the amount of give that the world had, especially with some of the main relationships. Should we recount for the listeners in detail what that gripping opening 30 minutes or so is?
Yes.
What happens to you?
Take me there, fellas.
Get you in.
I think you should describe to us, Julia, what happened. Like, okay. what did you see?
Well, you know, that's sort of nice. There's sort of a poetry to that because I didn't play this back in 2015. I was not a gamer then. So my first time dipping into it really was now, 2021. And this was after a failed attempt, maybe a couple years ago, when I was just like, this is sad and everything is gray and dusty. And you can't make anything nice. And I don't want to touch it anymore. but something in me was like, go back to Fallout 4, Julia. And I'm so glad I did. I don't want to be the person to make a comparison between what we just lived through and the apocalypse in video games, but like kind of the world outside got sad and depressed and isolating. And so I don't know, maybe there's something to that of just like, now I can sit and fall out a little bit more and it feels realistic in a way.
I, sorry, but I replayed this game in 2016, right after Trump got elected. It was about a year after I had played through it for the first time. And in that, I was like, there's something comforting in the violence and cynicism of this world that was very satisfying for me to retreat back into.
That's exactly it, Josh. I'm so glad you said that. So this is normal. This is something good. Okay, great.
So you're a true gamer now.
Oh yeah. My God, I know. Catharsis through a video game is like a new thing for me, but it's extremely satisfying. Right, okay. So Dave, back to your question. What the hell happens when you turn on this masterpiece of a game? First, you get a little narration scene about a war. I don't know. I didn't follow that too much.
There was a war.
Okay, there's a war.
It is one of them.
First of all.
And for some reason, I don't know, I didn't feel like we got a lot of narrative definition around this. For some reason, it's the 50s, but it's like not the 50s.
No.
I don't know. For some reason, the world is stuck in the 50s.
Yeah.
And that's like cool. And everybody's like super into it.
It would be funny if somebody was like, why are we doing this?
This sucks.
This is terrible. Why haven't we advanced the clock a little bit?
Why is this shit just like the Jetsons?
Yeah.
retro futurism. Right? They love it.
Tell me why that is. Like, what's the narrative reason for that? Like, why humanity is still doing the 50s?
What I think is the reason, like, in the world is that technology advances as it did in reality, but culture doesn't. Like, culture kind of gets stuck in the sort of late 40s, early 50s, peak Cold War, nuclear anxiety space. But technology advances, and also technology advances, like, in terms of atomic energy in a path that it does not in the real world. And so that kind of ends up being the, as opposed to, I don't know enough about science to explain this, but like, nuclear power is what is more common as opposed to whatever we actually do, semiconductor technology or something like that.
My cynical answer is that it's just, that's the fallout thing.
Yeah.
And they had to, you know, this is part of the fallout world. They decided somewhere around like two or three, like that this was just cool. And they're right. It is extremely
cool. It is super cool.
And like wandering around and listening to like these 40s songs and like, you know, blowing up spaceships and whatever that's just great. A cool vibe, and so they
it's
had
great
to,
yeah. It's really great.
So you're in the 50s, and
so that's the first 15 seconds of
it's also, this is the only game that gives you even that much, right? Like, what's the other one just kind of throw you right in.
Yeah, this is, you actually get this to see
a little bit of pre-war life. Pre-war life, but
before the nuclear apocalypse. Yeah. Before it all happens, the nuclear apocalypse actually happens. You actually get to see what it was like before, which you never got to in these other Fallout games.
Then what happens? You get dropped into your house in Sanctuary Hills, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing you do is like, you're bantering with your spouse and you go into the bathroom and you look in the mirror and you're like, we got to get ready for tonight's thing, honey. Mm-hmm. And sort of like Aaron and I are doing right now, that serves as the character creator, because you get to spend as long as you want in that bathroom mirror. And yes, like Aaron is doing, you get to multiple angles of the thing.
So,
yeah.
who did you make, Julia? Who was your person?
You know, okay, so I think it's important to say, just come clean right off the bat with you guys, that I downloaded a mod.
Wow. Jesus Christ. Holy shit.
Hell yeah.
A modder.
Three mods. Two are easy to describe. One, which I'll start with, was just like some dude was like, hot faces in Fallout.
Good. That sounds like a good
templates for hot.
Great mod.
It seems like a good place to start. Yeah.
Great mod concept.
I was like, well, if I'm going to commit to this, I'm going to commit. So I picked that. I picked the super busty mod, which is exactly what it sounds like. And then the third mod was make your husband Jason Statham. So I made sure I was saddled up with those. So in the bathroom mirror, it was me and my hubby Jason Statham just being like, you look great, sweetheart.
Yeah.
And his like wife.
Did he have his accent? You look great.
You look great. No,
you look great.
He should have had an accent. He didn't. It's the same old voice, but it's just like.
If you're going to have a mod that's make your husband Jason Statham, I feel like you have to get the accent right. What are you doing otherwise?
Great.
I know. Ridiculous. So, but the hot face, big busty girl mods did kind of set me on this path of making like a glamazon queen who was just like, I don't know. They did something to her skin where it was really glowy and smooth. I mean, Aaron, you've seen a picture of her. It's unreal.
I can't get, I mean, you saw her too, Owen, when you came over the other day. I can confirm she's one of the hotter.
She's very sad.
One of the hotter Fallout PCs I've seen. And as as everyone on this call knows, sometimes it can be hard to get a hot person in like pre-2016-ish, like like the open world RPG people builder. It gets a little iffy sometimes.
It's a little angular.
Yeah.
A lot of
well,
shapes.
And I think that sort of speaks to, Julia, your problem with the game originally, which is like, this is not a system that is built for designing beautiful things, and Fallout definitely leans into it by just having the world be ugly, and with that kind of, I think, is them working with what they've got. So I like that the only mods you installed affect the first
more attractive.
The first 5 minutes of the game to for your
How can I come in and slay?
Yeah.
All you can do, and it's kind of a great metaphor for the apocalypse, is just like the world is terrible, but your hair looks fly. Your lipstick is on point. Yeah. Like, that was what
I did you name her?
Aaron picked her name.
Uh-oh.
I was like, okay. I don't know. Aaron makes fun of me because I have a tendency to give hot chicks old lady names. Like, I name all of my women Dorothy, and he thinks that's really stupid. We named her Fawn, and she was like a sexy fawn.
Okay.
I did something on this most recent playthrough. I did something I've never done before in this kind of game, which was I spent like 45 minutes on the character creator trying to make it look as much like myself as I possibly could.
Ooh.
And it didn't come out great.
It looked okay.
I sent it to you guys. I showed you guys.
Get ready and stop hogging the mirror.
Right.
The first time I made it, I made a woman of color. I can't remember her name. I just was like, I'm going to make somebody very different. And that's what I did. I played the whole game that way. This last time I was playing on my computer and I started a save that I had last played in late 2019. I had no idea where I was or what was going on. And it turned out to be a man named Douglas. I don't know how that happened, but he was just a guy. Nothing particularly special about him. I thought the name was funny at the time. It made me laugh when I saw it pop up again. So
made us laugh.
Yeah.
That's all I really needed. Yeah.
Aaron, go ahead and tell the boys about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I my guys, I think that's the thing about the dude vault dweller, maybe about the lady vault dweller too, but dude vault dweller does have this sort of like aura about him, which is just like, okay, like,
yeah. I love, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I love when you are in dialogue and you skip through it and he's like,
because if somebody else is doing the voice line.
Yeah.
And you skip
right. It. It's like the person is still talking.
Right. And a normal game will just like speed through it. But this game, your guy actually goes, you said the lady goes,
similarly bitchy.
Are you two mad?
No, I agree fully. That's like a very small like design choice that's so, so funny. Yeah. But yeah. So he's similarly to Douglas. He's like sort of just a dude. But I tried to make him super sculpted because I was like, this guy's a military man. We learned this in the prologue. He's seen battle. He's like starting to get used to like civilian life, but that's still in him. So I tried to make him super chiseled. He came out looking sort of like Damian Lewis.
Sure.
So like, I didn't know that's Homeland, right?
Sure.
And
is he billions. Damian Lewis?
Yeah, he's got the hard lemon face, you know?
Yeah.
Is he a redhead?
Yeah, he's like a hard ginger lemon face. and I think that's what I was going for.
Okay.
His name's Vice Roberts. His vice is what his, the way I rationalized it was that's what his squad mates called him in the war when he was in Alaska fighting with his power armor or whatever the fucking lore is. Yeah, so Vice Roberts.
And because Aaron always has to do the most with names.
Right.
It always has to be.
Right. And he
brick smash wall or whatever the fuck.
Brick smash wall. That's a good one.
I remember my first dude that I ever made ended up looking like Adrian Brody, kind of, and I didn't intend for that.
I wanted to just quickly just emphasize to anyone considering buying Fallout after all this time, you can also make your spouse. That's the funnest things about this character creator is that the convention is you're switching between you and your wife or you and your husband, whoever the player character is, mm-hmm. and you sort of choose your gender organically. But if you edit the gender that you are not going to play as, that will stick. And so mm-hmm. that person will be your spouse.
Yeah, but it doesn't even matter.
For about 10 minutes.
They're then murdered then 5 minutes later
in front of you.
And Aaron, one of the first conversations, I don't know if you remember, that you and I ever had about video games, we were talking about Fallout 4, and you were complaining to me that you had spent hours making a wife. Then you were pissed.
And Kellogg.
My perfect, beautiful.
Puts a bullet in her head.
You were like, I mean, she had hair and eyes that wouldn't quit. Just a beautiful, beautiful woman. And I was like, she sounds great.
That's why I was late meeting you tonight. I'm sorry.
That's right. I'm sorry. Like red eyes. Like,
yeah.
If you are spending a long time in the character creator,
characters start
talking to each other. Yeah. Like you change your guy's nose and the wife is like, I love that nose, you know?
Which can be especially gratifying if you're making, like, a fucking monster.
Yes.
Like, some awful, you're putting, like, burn marks on him or, like...
Right. Like, and she's like, there's that face I fell in love with.
Yeah. So handsome. Yeah.
Listen, after breakfast, I was thinking we could head to the park for a bit. Weather should hold up.
Let's get pumpkins instead. Carve jack-o'-lanterns.
Sir? Mom? Should come and see this.
So then, pretty quickly after this, bada bing, bada boom, things just start happening. You're having breakfast with your family. You have a baby, Sean. That's what you've decided to name your baby. It's fine, whatever. No tea, no shade. It wouldn't be my choice, but whatever.
Certainly not. Very, very far away. Very far away.
Very far away. Yeah. And somebody comes to your door to sell you a membership to a vault, which... we're living in ideal 50s land, but there seems to be some kind of context for needing Fallout shelters. And I don't know about you guys, but my chick hastily signed all the paperwork and was like, yeah, definitely. This is a game called Fallout. So we're going to need that.
We're definitely going to get into the Fallout shelter.
And sure enough, sooner or later, shit goes down, and then you're
sooner. In fact, about 2 seconds after you sign the vault contract, the nukes start going.
Perfect timing. Yeah.
In your life, where you were just like, "I might need this one day."
Serendipitous. Yeah.
The next minute. Yeah, and then you run to your Fallout shelter and it just kind of walks you through. You don't have a lot of autonomy yet at this point. You don't even get to be in third person yet, which I found very upsetting. You go down into your shelter and you're in cryostasis.
Yes. Right? Because they've played a dirty trick on you.
They have?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Because you're expecting to go down and like live there for a period of months or possibly years, but not that long. And your idea is you're going to wait out the bombs, you're going to wait out the radiation, you're going to be fine. But a strong theme of the Fallout games, one of them is like corporate like fuckery.
Yes. Yeah. And malfeasance.
Malfeasance. Yes, exactly. On one of those accounting terminals, you can find that Vault Tech has secretly decided to cryogenically freeze everyone who came to this vault in Sanctuary Hills. So that I think they're testing like irradiated humans versus pure like pre-war humans. And they want to get the finest specimens and they want to ruin you. And so they freeze you for many, many years.
200 years.
Yeah, it's an accident. An accident happens. They didn't mean to do this, but you end up frozen for many years.
This is my problem with the narrative. The beginning of the narrative is that there are too many reversals right away and just... I don't know. Look, I'm a new script writer. I just graduated. Who am I to say? But you're telling me it's the 50s, but it's not. And then it's nuclear fallout, but it's not. But it's actually putting people on ice, but it's a dirty trick. But then an accident happens and they're there for longer than they're supposed to be. So they kind of got what they wanted, but not in the way they wanted. Like,
I mean, I think, sorry, go ahead.
No, that was done.
No, Aaron looked like he was about to.
Oh, no, please.
Well, I was just going to say, I think that some of that, if you were like, I was not, and Josh was not, and Julia, you were not. If you had some Fallout lore, you would kind of be suspicious of this vault to begin with, right? Because I think it's like a big thing in the universe that the vaults are all fucked up somehow.
Yes.
And even in this game, like you go around, and you find vaults, and they've all got their own little specific like thing about how they're fucking with the inhabitants of the vault in ways that the inhabitants don't know about. So I would imagine that you would not necessarily like be shocked to learn, oh, I'm being chronogenically frozen. I didn't expect to be, but that's just feature of this series.
That's totally right. That's totally right. And also, you're going to spend as Vice Roberts or whoever you have, you're going to spend the entire game unraveling like the mechanics of how
right.
what happened while I was frozen. How is time passed? How has the world changed? Like that's one of the huge tasks of the game. So it doesn't expect you to get all of it at once. It basically just expects you to be like, I was frozen. Some shit went down because, well, you're frozen. What happens? I mean, we've alluded to it.
Tell me.
Your beautiful, gorgeous wife. You spent an hour or two or three or four creating.
Yeah.
He gets you because you're in the pod. You've been frozen. You see outside two people come up. Your wife's been frozen with your baby boy, Sean. They open the case and they say, give us the baby, like everything's okay. They take your kid. Your wife doesn't like it and she's fighting. And they, boom.
Cap her.
Ice her.
I'm not giving you, Sean.
It's been an indeterminate amount of time. You've been frozen and then you wake up and this happens and then right. you get refrozen and then you wake up again and you're walking
yes.
out.
Yes.
As far as you know, it's been an hour and a half.
We right.
Mm-hmm. And then you go exploring and you find your old home and you realize that it's been 200 and something years.
Mm-hmm. But you are going to say, where's Sean? Which you are going to repeat about 250 more yeah. times throughout the game. Where's Sean?
I like how as the game goes on, like, you know, you've got, I'm sure we'll talk about this a little more, but the sort of four dialogue choices you always have. The top one is often, Sean?
Yeah.
Question mark.
Right.
Tell me more about Sean.
That was another thing Sean? I remember reading a lot about in this game is that compared to, this is the first Fallout game that had a fully voiced protagonist.
Sure.
And all the other Fallout games were a lot like, you know, Outer Worlds or Skyrim, where you choose your dialogue choice. It's fully written out and when you choose it, and then it just proceeds to the reaction to that line you picked mm-hmm. it. This game, to its severe detriment, I think, gives you these weird little shorthand
yes.
prompts for like respond as like yes, no, sarcasm, or
yeah.
fuck you. And then like you don't know what it's going to be. You know, they're like, you know, I'm walking to Good Neighbor, right? And the guy's like, you have to pay the toll to get through. And your options are like, pay the toll, pull your gun, or sarcasm. And I'm yeah. like, what is sarcasm? It's sarcasm, Sean.
Yeah.
And you pick sarcasm, yeah. and your guy's like, I didn't realize it was bring your ugly asshole to work day at the Bad Attitude Factory.
Yeah.
You're like, whoa, if I had known that's what I was going to say, I probably
yeah, definitely wouldn't have said that.
That sucks.
Yeah. I can't think of another game that does the same thing. Like, I think mostly they just like at this point tell you what you're going to say when you choose it.
I think it's they're going for Mass Effect. I think yeah. they want to be doing Mass Effect. I think the difference is, and not to slag off the writing. I think there's a lot of great writing in Fallout that's really fun. I love a lot of the companions. I think they're well written.
Mm.
But like, I think you've honed in on Josh the sarcasm, which is often an option. It often lets you. It's like you want to be a smartass, buddy. Well, here you are. Back up those Twitter followers, my friend. but it always comes out, or often comes out, real weird.
I was just at the scene where you go into Kellogg's memories and you're in the memory den and you're playing.
Yep, yeah,
they've hooked up Nick Valentine, and you come out of that scene and Nick Valentine, your you know robot detective.
A pretty well-written character.
An amazing character. A character I love.
Julia's favorite,
He comes out and he's like, that was crazy. I don't know. I'm all messed up. And they're like, how do you feel? And I picked sarcasm because I like to. And my character says something like, we should plug Nick into the toaster next time. And then we'll get some yummy toast to eat. Like, Jesus. Like, how many fucking years did it take to make this game? And that's what you come up with.
Yeah. Like human adjacent conversation.
Exactly. It's like...
The game,
this is like
when my girl was sarcastic, people did what people do to a sarcastic woman in real life and told her to calm down and like,
oh god,
like okay,
like
now right. I've played through the game now 2.5 times, and I've played the first time as a woman and the second and third time as a male character, and the voice acting for the female protagonist I found way better than the male voice. And you know, no shade, because that's an insane job that person had to do. They probably have 300 hours of dialogue recorded into this game. But it's a lot to ask. And so if you don't deliver, you know, your sarcasm quips well enough, it's going to really suck.
We should try plugging you into a toaster next. Fresh toast.
Now we're getting into, you're in the world. You're exploring the new world that you've been dumped into. You got to find your baby boy, and you're going to meet up to 13, I think it's companions.
Yeah.
Which my mind was blown, actually. I had to look that up, and
I have no idea there were that many.
I know. It's like a lot. And a lot of them have, we're saying it's not like Mass Effect, which is true, but a lot of them have like loyalty missions that you have to do. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are romanceable.
Not the good ones, but whatever.
Who do you wish was romanceable, Julia?
Oh, I mean, why isn't Nick Valentine my boyfriend?
That's a good point.
It's cruel and it's rude.
Does he have a little synth thing going on down there? Like, how does that work?
Does he have a synth penis?
A synth penis.
I hope so.
I guess that's a general synth question. We could save that for
we're gonna do it later
on. After hours.
Yeah.
I was refreshing my memory on the companions today of this game. Mm-hmm. And I remembered pretty much all of them. I was like, oh yeah, Kate, the like tough Irish, like age fighter girl. I liked her. She was cool. Yeah, Nick Valentine.
It's nice to know that even when I'm about to have a foreign object shoved into my noggin, you find new horrible ways to laugh at my expense.
Did you meet Hancock the ghoul?
I did, who Aaron keeps calling Alexander Hamilton. So that's really
making a lot of Hamilton.
Yeah.
Hamilton. Me? I ghouled for him. Me?
Yeah.
What? I shot him with a laser musket.
My skin's decomposing. Why was I the one chosen?
That's a pretty good Lin, Owen.
Yeah, that's
not bad.
Will say
gotta this... meet my son. That's my favorite Hamilton line.
Gotta start
a new nation, gotta meet my son.
That's basically the plot of this game.
Yeah exactly.
I got a dog this past year, and so this playthrough I couldn't ever not be with dog meat. He's incredible, and the dog performance is a particularly all-time video game dog, I think, in that my own dog was often alarmed by the dog sounds and like collar shake, harness shaking noises and whimpering sounds. It's an amazing dog, I think.
Yeah.
In terms of the companion quips, there aren't enough of them, right? So they all become really repetitive if you spend too long with the same companion. And the thing that really bugs me the most is that many companions will make like snarky comments to you anytime you're looting stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's like, the entire loop of this game hinges on you picking up all this shit. And so to have Kate there just like, why are you picking up all that old shite? Well, like you're trying to start a museum or something. You're like, fuck off. I'm playing the game. Like, this is what I need.
I'm trying to make a powerful receiver for my shotgun, Kate. I need this like, you know, aluminum can for that.
Josh,
how dare you criticize?
You bring that up because I wanted to touch on that specifically because like, as a newcomer to this game, I didn't know I was going to get blowback for just, it's the fucking wasteland. Like, you're really going to be picky about what I'm scavenging for? And I didn't expect it. And the first time that I heard my companion be like, Well, there's no accounting for taste. What? This could be useful. You don't know. Like,
yeah.
And then I was like, maybe different companions are like more accepting of you, but no, they all.
I spent a lot of time, not this playthrough, but my post-Trumpian playthrough of this game. I went full on Brotherhood of Steel, and I spent most of my time with Paladin Dance as my companion. And I don't know if any of you guys have gone through the full Dance arc, but his whole side quest, maybe this will spoil, but it's really, really rich and well done and cool. And, you know, the Brotherhood of Steel is this, they take the opinion that robots are need to all be destroyed, that technology has advanced too far, and they're anti-progress, right?
Except for their cool power armor.
Except for their amazing shit. But
giant airship that's so fucking cool when it comes in. I remember that first time I saw that. I was like, oh, yeah.
But they're really anti-institute and anti-synth, yeah. Right? Yeah. All synths must be shot on sight. Oh. And with Paladin Dance, if you like get far enough, you go through this, and not to spoil it for all of you, but he finds out that he is a synth.
Oh, yeah.
And okay. There's this whole thing where Elder Maxson, who's the head of the Brotherhood of Steel, gives you orders to execute Paladin Dance because you find out that he's a synth, and you have to decide whether to, you know, lie and say that you killed him, or actually kill him, or try to let him go, or whatever. And it's very fun and cool.
That's cool.
Distracting.
Can you kill Elder Maxson instead?
At that point, I mean, you always could, right?
Right. True.
You want to get his coat anyway.
Yes,
he's the coolest.
He's got a sweet coat.
But it's distracting to play with Paladin Dance as your companion, because I find his voice actor to sound so much like a low budget George Clooney.
It's not you, Dance. It's me. I'm sorry.
Thank you for being honest with me. Maybe this relationship between us was a mistake. Whether it's you or it's me or a bit of both, we obviously have some issues that need to be worked out.
We don't have to go through it beat by beat, but I guess how did you guys approach your playthrough? What was important to you? Were there things you skipped? Like, I'd love to just hear everybody's individual take on like how they went about finding Sean.
The first time I pretty much went beat by beat, I think, like until I got to sort of post Kellogg, and when it was like, okay, now I have to decide like which faction I'm going to like use to help me build the thing to get to the Institute. Then I kind of like took a step back and started doing some more random stuff. Subsequently, I like barely pay attention to the main quest at all. I like mostly just run out and like start going through the world. It's like not that fun for me, honestly, to like I do it to like when I feel like I should, but I'm primarily spend my time just like listening to the radio and running around to like different places and like unlocking, you know, the little like cha-ching is like very, you know, addictive for me. So like, I just like finding like places and killing people and not paying a ton of attention to it.
No, the cha-ching is so satisfying every time. It's like just endorphins.
Yes.
Every time you hear that shit.
The noise that makes you get XP from a skill check or discovering something new or,
cooking squirrel bits. You can get a couple, you know, iguana on a stick.
Is squirrel bits just pieces of a squirrel, or is it the nuts of an irradiated giant squirrel?
Wow.
That's
a great point.
I always assumed the former, but I like the idea of the latter.
I think we're going to have to write a letter.
Yeah.
I hear you, Eli, about the main quest. It's like fun to dip away from. And if I think my problem the first time around was like, I wasn't interested in engaging with the world in any other way. Mm. And so I was just leaning on the story, which is like, fine.
Yeah.
But you're going to get more out of it if, like I said, my big light bulb moment for me this time was I turned on the radio. And I hadn't done that the first time around because I just thought, who needs the distraction?
Wow.
No, my friends. Tune in to Diamond City Radio. It's, I don't know. My dad used to have a mixtape, a cassette that he would play on long car rides of all of the greatest hits of the 50s. So this was like, my brain was programmed to respond very favorably to all of this music because it reminds me of just out in the backseat of a car. And once I did that, I was like, oh, I get it. I can engage with this world and like not be scared because I have this very pleasant backdrop and almost like I'm in on the joke.
Mm-hmm. So yes.
Unlocked like I wanted to. That made me build settlements. I took settlements really seriously this time. You know, you build up sanctuary, you go and you clear out raiders from different places and you fix them up. And I was like building barns way before we had animals for them, but like gardens, making beautiful fences.
Yeah.
Just like make it nice. I just wanted to make it nice, make it as nice as I could. And when you approach the world as sort of a place you can make better in Fallout 4, then there's a lot to do, I feel like. That was kind of my thrust this time.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like, the radio is absolutely like the secret sauce of the game, yes. I think. Like, it's almost unfathomable to me to think about playing it without the radio. Yes. It seems like it would be such a fucking drag. But it's totally right. Like, the radio, like, unlocks the tone of the game completely. It's like, that's the thing that lets you spend hours in it. For me, maybe there are people out there that don't like the radio. I'd really like to talk to them and see what's going on there. But
I don't use the radio.
You don't use the radio? Holy shit. This is a thing. That is crazy.
This is a thing. Aaron doesn't use the radio in video games at all.
Not even Diamond City Radio?
Diamond City Radio. Holy, I agree that I'm wrong on this.
For me, yeah.
Too much input. Like, if I have a raider yelling at me, I've got the grenade indicator.
Yeah, for sure.
Music. It's, for me, it scrambles my brain, and it doesn't make it fun. It makes it like, like, too many.
Totally. There are times when it's like playing over dialogue where it's like, that's really annoying, or like,
sure.
Yeah, sometimes it's like, it's very distracting. But if you're just walking, it's like, if you're just having like the weird dum 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 soundtrack.
And I gotta say,
get old quick.
This most recent time I played, I did a lot less radio than I usually do. And I found the score, the original score, pretty good, honestly. I really liked the sort of ambient music that they had. I also spent about 45 minutes ranking all 36 songs of Diamond City Radio as a power in preferred order. This game hooked into me so hard in 2015 that I had like a Spotify playlist of this. I mean, somebody else made it. I didn't have to make it.
You enjoy it, don't you?
Yeah.
And for years, I still do. I'll pop it on when I'm like cooking in the kitchen or driving somewhere or when I was moving. I remember there was like a whole day and a half that I was like driving back and forth from apartment to apartment. And just like this music was with me. And I was able to recreate the list. I had to look up the full list of songs, and there's 36 of them. But I was able to remember a good 25 to 30 of those 36 songs because of the amount just of time I've dumb. Spent in that. It is the hook of the game by far.
Wait, what is your number one?
I know. We got to hear your best and worst.
Well, yeah. I'll give you my top three and my bottom three. How about that? Number one for me, or I'll go up from three. How about so? Three, number three of the top three is an extremely problematic one, but a real hook, which is Civilization.
Yes, John.
Bongo, yeah. Bongo, bongo, yeah, bongo.
That's a tough one.
Danny it's K's. A tough hang.
Yeah.
It's Danny Kaye and the Andrews Sisters
singing
about in the voice
jungles
of the native person in a tree singing bongo bongo bongo.
I remember Julia saying, I love the Civilization song. Is that wrong for me? Yeah.
It is, but it is incredibly
good. A little wrong.
But yeah. So catchy. Oh,
it's my that's so catchy. It's a great one. Number two is Orange Colored Sky.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Nat King Cole.
Nat King Cole. Sure.
Which is the backup singers going, this is it, IT, it.
Bam.
Alakazam. And the number one, which Owen and I text about a lot. Yeah. We send each other, Owen and I text each other lyrics from these. But The End of the World by Skeeter Davis is a truly outstanding piece of songwriting and performance that beyond being campy and fun and silly is just an incredible song.
Don't they know? Said goodbye.
Now my bottom songs, number 34 of 36 is Uranium Fever. I really don't like the novelty, you know. Number 35 out of 36 is Crawl Out Through the Fallout. I can't stand that.
Whoa,
shit.
These are like some of my tops.
I know, same.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, even those, like,
I love Uranium
I'm happy
Fever.
To listen to them. It's hard to do. Choosing the worst song is easy because the worst song is "The Wanderer" by Dion, because that song is not only grating on the ears but so horribly offensive as a citizen of the world in the year 2021. When you think that that's like. This is super
out of...
I don't think
I know that one off the top of my head.
That was the trailer. That was the gameplay trailer, the big hook.
I'm the wanderer.
Around.
No, Dion was really pissed about this song being included in the game. He like sued them, I think, to try and get it. Yeah.
The thing is, Dion has two hits in his life, and it's that song and Run Around Sue. This is other big
hit. Teenager in Love.
Okay. You got one and two, and then a mile and a half, and then three. But I just can't imagine the number of times that Dion, you know, in the 60s and 70s, like, must have performed those two songs back to back, where Run Around Sue is "Don't mess around with Run Around Sue. She's such a slut. She just gets with everybody." And then The Wanderer is "I sleep with a new girl every night and I'm so cool." And he doesn't, the cognitive dissonance that is necessary for someone to sing both of those songs and for a universe to appreciate both of those songs the same person is infuriating.
Wow. Wow.
Never thought about it like
that. What a take.
Well, I've listened to Diamond City Radio a lot.
A lot of thought into it.
A lot. And
an
important honorable mention to Grandma Plays the Numbers.
Yeah, of course, Grandma Plays the Numbers is the best song of all time.
That's my number one. In this game and the best song in all of life.
In all of human history.
We found out. Yes, we did. We found out. Now we know. We found out. We found out that Grandma plays the numbers.
It's not a very hard game to play. You know, like it's not a twitchy thing. You don't have to be good at, you know, aiming and clicking and, you know, whatever. You go into vats and just kill everybody. I'm super pro vats, but that's where that comfort comes from for me. It's like a game I don't really have to think about. I don't get killed by enemies that much. Like it's slow and you don't have to be on your toes that much as a game. It's not a stressful experience to play.
How did you find it, Julia, doing vats mode for the first time in your gaming career?
I kept forgetting to use them.
That's fine. You don't have to. You sure don't have to use it.
At first. And then I was like, oh, I guess I can slow time and like isolate body parts that I want to like annihilate. And I don't know. It feels like cheating, but it's allowed. So there's something exciting about that. Like the game is giving you a leg up on all of your enemies. I don't know. In an unfair world, it feels kind of like, great. I don't know, Aaron, I feel like I remember you telling me vats were controversial, and you heard some gamers be like, it's unplayable without vats.
Oh, yes. I think it's uncontroversial in that I've heard the opinion expressed before that as a first-person shooter, it's busted.
Oh, okay.
And that, like, it's the mechanics aren't good enough as just a pure shooter, mm-hmm. that you need to have vats in there to even it out. Otherwise, it would be difficult to play. Mm-hmm, But
and vats... Vats is very satisfying, I find, and there's certain stuff that really is only doable with vats, like those super mutants that are carrying nuclear bombs and charging at you. If you can go into vats, you can target their bomb and shoot them in the bomb, and then the whole thing explodes and they never get close to you, and it rules. It's awesome. Yeah. And it's the best way to deal with that shit.
Well, if you shoot them in the head and you kill them, you can get the mini nuke. Think about that. Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
To pause and have the wherewithal to be specific about your shooting is really cool. I really appreciate that.
Well, it's also an explicit callback to how combat worked in Fallout before the modern era. Because in Fallout 1 and 2, that was what combat was. It was turn-based. And you would have these percentages. I forget if you could target limbs. I think you could, but I'm not 100% sure. But that was the idea. Is every combat was, it was, which is the, like, what is that? It's a guitar hit, right? Like, guitar jam hit, which just signifies like something hard's going to happen right now. Violence's going to happen. And yeah, that was every battle.
Wow.
And so starting in Fallout 3, when we had these new sort of open world, real-time 3D explorable,
right,
it sort of the series changed.
Mm-hmm.
The
first two were isometric, right?
Yeah, much like, yeah, like Baldur's Gate or whatever. But yeah.
And now we have Fallout 76, in which you can't use VATS mode because you're playing an MMO and you'd have to like pause the world, which you can't do.
I was disappointed to see that was going to be the next. I don't know. Did you ever touch it? I've never played it.
I touched a little bit and I said, check, please.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a moment in Fallout 4 this time when I was like, I understand why they made Fallout 76. Because such a huge part of Fallout 4 that's new to Fallout 4 is the base building, like all the crafting. And I do love, like, it sounds like you guys love. I do love looting in this world. I love like this desk.
Irresistible.
Right. It's irresistible. And like, and you get to know what everyday items are like valuable for your
base. Yes, totally.
Like I know
when you walk into an office and you're like, oh fuck yeah, there's a typewriter in here. There's some fans in here. It's like, I hit the fucking jackpot.
I remember lugging around. I was like overburdened at one point. I was like, what is overburdening me? And I was like, oh, I have 10 desk fans.
Yeah. I've got 45 hot plates in my backpack.
Yeah. Hot plates. So key.
Sean? Oh my God. It's really you.
Who are you?
I have to know what happens to Sean. I didn't get to the end, so.
Oh man,
God, it's amazing. So
the story is pretty good.
Yeah, wait. Yeah. How? What point did you leave off in the story?
I made it to Good Neighbor, and I was chatting with a songbird named Magnolia, and she was the only person I had the opportunity to flirt with, and I was kind of salty about that. But she was very busty, per the mod.
Everybody's busts were huge. I thought it was just the character. Wow.
So you have scientists with name tags that are like on their neck.
Out here. Yeah.
And they're just like, come with me to the lab.
That's so funny.
The whole vibe, you guys, I'm telling you, you need to try it. Yeah, I left off where I had come full circle on ghouls, and now I could see a future for me and Hancock. And Aaron and Owen had said since day one, like, you're going to fall hard for this guy. Like, don't write off ghouls. I know they don't have noses, but just give this guy a chance. And I was like, stop trying to make ghouls happen. They're not sexy. Maybe he negs me enough that like nothing I did was impressive. And that really appealed to me.
You didn't think they were sexy, like Death Claws or something, you know?
Not like super mutants or
Mirelurks.
Yeah.
Or even a half decomposed synth. I was like, Nick, why is it perfect? We found each other after all this time.
Nick is very appealing.
What the hell are you talking about?
What the hell are you talking about?
Do me?
We can't do anything.
I could literally electrocute you.
My other favorite character in the game is also a ghoul who you meet in Good Neighbor, which is the desiccated, preserved Vault-Tec representative from the beginning of the game shows up in Good Neighbor as a ghoul.
Yep.
And he's overwhelmed by seeing you again. And you can choose to be very kind to him and have him come live in your settlement. And he's so grateful. And he keeps saying, I never thought anything this wonderful would ever happen again. I've given up on the world. It's like this really lovely little side plot.
So desperate. It's sad. I was like, ew, you're gross.
I'm sure you can
be. I think
you
can say that, actually.
Yeah, I'm sure you can be a dick to him.
That sounds better than the side quest. It sounds like it has a similar ending where there's a dude in Diamond City who's just like, Nuka-Cola.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the homeless guy. Like, or, you know, everybody's homeless, relatively speaking. He's like particularly down on his luck.
Yeah, and you can give him the options are like, right, sure, belittle him in some way, like, see you later. Or like, if you have a Nuka-Cola, give him Nuka-Cola.
Yeah.
And you can give him the Nuka-Cola and he just goes, yeah, like Nuka-Cola. And then you talk to him out of nowhere. You go, hey, what do you say about working for me? It's like this hobo you gave a Coke to.
Yeah.
Mentor.
Oh my God.
So yeah, I definitely recruited him and have him. I had him work the front desk at my Dunkin' that I built in one of my settlements.
Yeah.
So it felt like that was
good. Oh yeah, we do need to talk. That's your end game, right, Aaron? You said that's.
How the fuck did you build a Dunkin' in your settlement, Aaron?
So one of the things you can do with Fallout at this point in time is pay Bethesda extra money to get sub DLC, but above game content. And they've like partnered with like community creators in some of these instances, called their Creation Club, quote unquote.
Yeah.
So I bought one that's the Slocum's Joe set, which is this world's Duncan. But we're in Mass. We're in Mass. And I don't want to offend any of you. I know you're all from Massachusetts. But as a non-Mass guy, I got to build a fucking Duncan. I was in the middle of the night. I was like fighting like raiders, trying to like break into the Duncan headquarters to get the plans to build a Duncan in my base. And I wanted so badly for him to just be barking shit like, all right, I'm almost a Duncan. Yeah. Got to build one of these motherfuckers.
Gonna get my iced coffee.
Right.
Yeah. It's close.
Yeah. So that was really fulfilling non-story DLC for me that became story DLC. Yeah.
Right. You created your own story. Yeah.
Right. And then
Julia, you don't know what happens with Sean. You don't know the outcome of that story.
Wow. If I may,
please.
I'm happy to. Please. So eventually you enter the Institute. And you get your way into the Institute.
You have to teleport into it, actually.
It's complicated. Right. Yeah. It's a multi-step process. And once you get in there, you meet a boy who is labeled as Sean, who's like 8 or 9. And you try to go talk to him, but you can't. And he doesn't really react. And you realize that he is a synth. He's not actually your son. And you meet the head of the Institute, who's this old man. And he starts talking to you and he tells you he's the robots that little boy was a robot. And then the reveal comes that this older, 75-year-old man that you're talking to is Sean, is your son. And that in between the baby being stolen from the vault and you waking up again, 75 or so years have passed. And your character didn't realize that. And so Sean is an old man, much older than you.
It's me. I am Sean. I am your son.
And at that point, you can choose to side with the Institute and say, you're my son and I'm going to join you and we're going to,
help you achieve your goals of whatever it is you want to do.
Whatever it is the Institute does. Yeah. Or you can say I think no matter how you get to the Institute, you sort of have to side against them, right? Like the factions are all aligned against the Institute in some way.
Yeah.
Except so for then the you kind itself, of, if you...
Right. But you up until that point, they're the bad guys.
Right. Because you need the other factions to get you into the Institute. Mm-hmm. Like you need the railroad.
You have to pick one of them to help you build the giant teleporter. Yeah.
But they are like very clearly the bad guys.
Opposed to the Institute. Yeah.
And so then you kind of have to reckon with like, oh, my son is in charge of all this. Everything I've been doing, it's sort of this, what it could be a meaty story.
I thought it was cool. I don't know. The first time I was like, that's really fucking cool. I did not think that was going to be how the story went. And I'm excited that it did.
Well, yeah, I liked it.
How you deal with it is really cool too. Like I remember it being kind of thorny of like, because you've got different ways of reacting to that based on the factions. And one is, we mentioned the railroad a little bit. They're like underground resistance, kind of. And so their whole thing is like stealth and sabotage. And I remember I got the Institute using them. And so I went back to them and I was like, okay, like my son's into some bad shit. The Institute's whole thing is like they're snatching people and like replacing them with robots and like bad shit.
Yeah.
And I remember I had to start basically lying to his face, pretending that I was still on his side and like undermining him. And it let me do that for a while, but it got more and more like excruciating to the point where, and to its credit, it let me do this after something that it was obvious that I had ratted them out to like the resistance. He like met me on the roof of a building and he was like, he was basically like,
this is Sean, right?
Sean, right.
Father.
He was like, do you promise me you had nothing to do with this? Like, look me in the eye. And I couldn't do it. I was like, no, like I had something to do with this. That's fucked up. And I was like,
did you pick the sarcasm response there? Yeah. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Ooh, look at me.
I have something to do with your fucking face, Sean.
Yeah.
Just but, grandma plays the numbers. Blame.
Yeah. We found out.
But like that emotional complexity, even though I agree that I think it's probably like just basically on off switches for a number of factions, like more broadly. Yeah. I did feel like there was an emotional complexity there that
totally.
I respected.
You've been in the Commonwealth. You've seen what it's like. I assure you that you are better off with us.
Yeah, Julia, I hope you can. I hope you keep going and you get to the Institute because I think you're going to like that place. It's very nice and it's nice and expensive looking.
It looks very expensive. Yeah. Like, it's very clean. It's extremely clean.
There's like air conditioning here and shit.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Aren't they keeping? There's like a little compound with like gorillas or something.
Yeah, they have synth gorillas. For
yeah.
Some
oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I feel like, aren't they, I didn't get this far in my most recent play, but they're like, their goal is to sort of repopulate and sort of recreate the world, right? Like, we're going to make it nice again. We're learning how to grow plants and put animals back in, and they have to be robots for a while, but eventually, like, there'll be real gorillas out there.
Yeah, I guess why start with gorillas? I'm wondering. You know. Maybe start with like cows or puppies. Go from there. I don't know.
Brahmins. I think you mean Brahmins.
Brahmins, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Brahmins. Yeah. Okay, but now why did they take him? Because there seems to be a lot of weight around, like,
because he was like pure, you know, pre-Fallout. Or not pre-fall, you know, like pre-like nuclear wasteland genetics.
Yeah.
You know, like the youngest person we could find that like existed before the the bombs fell upon the eastern seaboard, who was like preserved in cryogenic stasis. Like they're like, that will be our source. Like he's the source for the synths, right? Is that that's why they call him Father. That's how he's known. He's like his genetic material is like in all the sense or something.
So does Sean have kids? Are you a grandma?
I don't think so.
And if you are a grandma, do you play the numbers?
Do you play the numbers?
Wow, that is okay. So it ends by you either having to side with your son or what?
You pick one of the other factions to like take the Institute down. Mm-hmm. And then
if you side with your dad, you find out that he's dying of cancer, I think.
Oh, yeah. I think you find that out no matter how.
Right. But so you are actually going to take over the Institute for him after he's gone.
Don't you have to before? Like, I remember you telling me you did this like evil, quote unquote, evil run, Owen, as one of your playthroughs. And I remember you telling me that like, you're like, Sean, like, you're my baby boy. Like, I've spent so much time to get to you. I'll do anything to like. I'm with you until the end. And he'll be like, that's wonderful, Father. And then he'll just be like, okay, I'm going to need you to go into the railroad base.
Yeah, that's the other, like,
everyone there.
Yes. No matter who you side with, you have to destroy the other ones.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of stupid. Or I remember that being, I was like, because I went with the railroad when I played through the whole thing. I was like, the railroad seems like the coolest ones. Like, Brothers Duel is like, they get a lot of good equipment, but they're a little freaky. They're a little like, you know, too zealous,
militant.
The railroad was like the ones that felt like they were the pure good guys.
Yeah.
You have to like kill, you have to take down the airship, and I was like, why? I don't really understand, like, what is the point of me having to do that before I finish the game? Like, why can't I just, like, you know, defeat the Institute or like talk Sean down from whatever like power trip he's on? Like, why do we have to kill everybody?
Next up, the railroad.
Choo choo.
Yes, anyway,
I mean, one thing we haven't talked about yet, and as a longtime fan of the podcast, I'm hurt, but this game is an RPG.
Oh, beat it to it.
How did we even forget the cover?
Yeah.
Very much an RPG. And, you know, it is, I'm a sucker for an RPG. I always say any game with a skill tree is a game I want to play.
You going to keep playing Fallout 4, Julia, do you think?
There's a lot here, and even knowing the sort of like where we go with it, how I get there is going to be unique enough to me. I feel like it's enough of an RPG that like I will find my way through the skill tree in a way that's unique. And like, that's all I want from a game, truly, is to feel like I made an impression on it and I didn't just go through the movements. That's not really my thing. I like to feel that I got my hands dirty. Guys, I don't know how to thank you enough for taking this epic fucking journey with us. I don't even know what to say. Here we are. We have Fallout 76.
Sure. We'll be back for the 76 episode. Yeah.
You better be back for the 76. Yeah.
All right.
Yep. I don't really want to play it, but I guess I could if I had to.
Thank you guys so much for having us. This is incredibly fun.
It has been our true pleasure, our truest pleasure. I think we just all utter a big grandma plays the numbers on three. And then we just stop the record. I don't know. However you want to take us out. Who wants the last word? Somebody say something clever. Go out on a clever thing.
Clever. Yeah.
Or weird.
Owen's thinking.
Owen's got. He's got.
Don't you know it's the end of this podcast?
There we go.
It ended when you said goodbye.